Moncrief on News Talk.
Although it was a long battle, it's arguable that the gay rights movement was one of the most successful in the history of Ireland, culminating in the passing of the marriage equality referendum. So are there lessons to be learned from how it organised itself? Michael Barron is the author of How Ireland's LGBTQ plus youth movement was built, Civil Society in the Pursuit of Social Justice. Michael, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thank you very much for having me back.
So, how was the movement in general? Was it organised? Was it a kind of a series of small groups dotted around the country, or was it kind of organised in a national way?
Yeah, it was all of those things, and also it took a long time. And I suppose I put this book together. Really, it took me about 10 years to write, and reflecting on 25 years of work. What I discovered was that there was three kind of main ingredients. One was youth and community work, which is building youth groups around the country and providing young people with political education. The other was working to change how people thought about LGBT young people and LGBT people in general through the media. Actually, you were one of the very first radio shows I was ever on, by the way, 20 years ago. It was quite difficult to get on radio when we started, but you were very kind. And then the other is, by, of course, working with politicians and policymaking. But I think that there's a whole process of community work that goes on behind the scenes that nobody sees because it's, by its very nature, very quiet. And about building relationships is the really kind of key ingredient. Like it wasn't a comms campaign, you know. It was something that built slowly over decades and decades.
Yeah, and that behind the scenes, that building relationship work. Could you give us kind of an example of what kind of things you're talking about there?
Yeah, no problem. So, for instance, when we started Belong To, which is the LGBT youth organization, there was just one LGBT youth group in the country, and now there's 90, as in 90, which is quite extraordinary. So building those relationships would have looked like, say, in 2005, I would spend a lot of time in Donegal working with the local community organizations, the Gardaí, the HSE, to start building up LGBTQ supports. And it resulted in a number of youth groups, including in very small areas, but then also with training for the guards, training for teachers, all of that, you know, so like whole communities were getting exposed to LGBT identities, and young people start coming out in schools safely, and generally the whole environment changed. So I think sometimes what this book is trying to do is tell the story behind marriage equality, because in ways marriage equality wasn't really our big issue, but it was that the work that created the conditions in which, even before the referendum happened, the vast majority of people in Ireland agreed with same-sex marriage. And this is the product of this work, I suppose, the argument of the book.
Yeah, no, because, yeah, you could easily argue that actually marriage equality is fantastic and everything as it was, but it's decriminalisation was the big, huge first step there.
Yes, exactly. And that's where the book starts, in 1993, for that reason, because that was an enormous moment of liberation. I mean, it was so hard won by so many great activists and people, and there was so much community trauma, you know, some like mistreatment by the Gardaí, an enormous amount of guilt and horrible, I suppose, attitudes from religious people as well. But with decriminalization came the birth of a real, like, gay social movement. You know, I remember being I went away to New York, and when I came back, and Ireland was like a different place, and it was just a few years after decriminalisation. And in ways it was because a whole like nightclub and pub scene and confidence kind of kicked in Ireland in the late 90s. And that was all because of decriminalisation, and then the equality legislation came in soon after. So the combination of both of those two things, I would argue, were the bigger, I suppose, aspect of why gay liberation became more possible in Ireland.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, politicians, you might meet a politician and a politician might say, I'm in favour of X, Y and Z, but publicly they mightn't be prepared to say that because they might be thinking the public aren't quite ready for it yet. So that, like, so from the point of view of the LGBT movement, there was probably one track which was convincing politicians, the other track was slowly, gradually changing those attitudes within communities to get them ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. And both can interplay with each other, of course. So, because politicians, of course, are interested in public opinion, as you're saying, and public opinion, I mean, laws only really hold public opinion supports them. So they both had to play together, you know. And I remember we would have done a lot of public opinion polling to prove to politicians that the public in general were in favour of gay rights. And I think once they kind of got their head around the fact that they were, and you know yourself, and I don't mean this disparagingly, but in stepping into the Oireachtas is a little bit like stepping back in time even now, I think. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, people's attitudes are, you know, somewhat behind where the population is. I often think the politicians underestimate public people's attitudes, you know. And we've seen it with abortion, we've seen it, you know, with Gaza, we've seen it with gay rights, you know, that people tend to be quite further along and further advanced than politicians think they are.
Yeah, having said all that, as we're speaking right now, Michael, Donald Trump is addressing the United Nations. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he's just said we are the hottest country anywhere in the world. I don't think he's referring to climate change. I think he actually thinks that it's getting huge applause from an American contingent there. But he's just, yeah, I suppose, a symptom of something that that we are seeing around the world, that we're seeing in this country too, where there's a pushback, where, you know, it seems inevitably to be three steps forward, two steps back. Like, are you getting that sense?
Yeah, definitely. And it is coming from the United States and Britain and other parts of Europe. You know, I mean, there is a global far-right movement. And it kind of seems like somehow it's, you know, mysterious. Does it really exist? Does it not? Like, it really does exist. You know, it's very well funded. There's three organizations in the United States whose primary purpose is to remove rights from LGBT people. And they receive more funding, those three organizations, than the entire LGBT movement around the world. So, like, the scale of the pushback is astronomical, you know. So that's really worrying. And that's part of the reason for writing this book, actually, as well, was that, like, we are now coming into a phase of pushback against rights toward minorities and LGBT people in particular. Mm. And this book was written as a way of trying to prepare and help the next generation. And we're claiming to have all the answers because we absolutely don't. The world is a very different place. But we have been here before in many ways, you know. Like, when we began Belong to, homophobia and transphobia was mainstream, you know. It was completely, absolutely mainstream to hear homophobia on news stations, you know. And we've moved so far from that to where we are now. But we were there and we did win the last battle, you know, so it's try to give, I suppose, people encouragement to keep going, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, a difficult balance there, I imagine, in the sense of, you know, young LGBT people are emerging, you know, they're experiencing a different sort of Ireland than perhaps the one you experienced when you were younger, or, you know, older members of the community experienced when they were younger. And you want them to enjoy that, but you don't want them to be complacent either. So you don't kind of, oh no, this won't last. Back in my day, it was, you know, blah, blah, you know, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So this is exactly a really important point. And so I've approached this what we describe as social memory, which is so instead of kind of trying to present a definite, like, absolute history of, here's how gay rights happened in Ireland, and this is absolutely the only way, you know, it's ever going to work. What I've been using is social memory, which basically is a community remembering together, and that memory will change depending on who's there. So that a young person's memory of their experience of school currently is as valid as a 60-year-old's memory of their schooling experience when they were, whatever, in their teenage period. So it's trying to loosen that up and not be so dogmatic about telling young people what they're going to do and should do, because the world is a very different place, and some of the harms that are coming and are happening around the world are really quite severe. And in a lot of ways, the tension, if we look at America in terms of the outlawing of care towards trans people, you know, the attempt to ban marriage equality again, in parts of Africa where the death penalty has only recently come in, you know, there is a really strong kind of pushback. So, like, we don't have all the answers, but we do know some of what are the ingredients, and those should be passed on, you know.
Yeah. I wonder at this stage, when, you know, we talk about, and now we use the word community a lot about all sorts of different groups, but when we say the LGBT community, as if that's a discrete group, like there's, you know, Ireland over here, and then you have this community kind of beside it. as opposed to most families in Ireland have somebody who's gay or trans. It's not a community, it's part of the community, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yes, exactly, Sean. And that's why all of this is so important for everybody, you know, and if we look at the far right and how they're going about things, you know, you'll have migrants, people first, you have then trans people, then LGB people, and then women, you know, so I mean, everything is connected, you know, so also the attempt to remove rights from people, from black people who are essentially homophobic white supremacists, you know, it will affect every family, and it will actually ultimately affect most people in the world if they're if they get enough energy behind them. But the point I'm really trying to make in the book is that we can prevent that from happening, you know, and a lot of what we can do is raise awareness about what is happening, you know. I think a lot of people are quite unaware of what social media companies are doing and how they're profiting from promoting hate and how they're profiting from this division and, you know, essentially an apartheid online where if you're considered liberal, you see one kind of internet. If you're considered conservative, you see a different kind of internet. And that kind of growing divide between communities, at all communities, and I don't mean LGBT communities, I mean everybody in the country or the world, is really kind of dangerous. And I suppose it would really be promoting the idea that people will get offline and get into their own local community, you know, and get to know each other again. You know, there's a whole process that we need to go through to get to know our neighbours again and to, you know, to get involved in local community activities again, that will really, because people in real life are an awful lot nicer than they are online, you know. Like, people do really want everybody to have a fair shot at life. That's by far, we know that, that people generally do. It's just these kind of, these online mechanisms make people very divided.
Yeah. Michael, thank you very much for speaking with us today. Michael Barron there is author of How Ireland's LGBTQ plus Youth Movement Was Built, Civil Society in the Pursuit of Social Justice.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.